Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you with it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know what to do. The whole world's watching and counting on you. And all you people listening out there, everybody, everywhere.
Hang on, hang on, hang on!
Welcome to Checkered Past, a loving postmodern examination of the Go-Go Check branded comic magazines published by DC Comics between February 1966 and August 1967. I'm Dr. Bob, and each week I'll be your guide on this trippy tour through 535 mid-century masterpieces of graphic noveldom.
This week, Our Army at War number 177. Cover date February-March 1967. Cover price 25 cents. Cover artist Joe Kubert, edited by Robert Kaniger. Featuring The Ace of Vengeance, written by Bob Haney, art by Irv Novik. And Blind Gunner, written by Robert Kaniger, art by Jerry Grandinetti. And The Steel Trap, written by Robert Kaniger, art by Mort Drucker. Are you ready? Are you with it? Then away we go, go.
See how the fluffy clouds move by us.
See how the clouds move by.
See how the morning mist can hide us away.
Hide us away. And now is so much fun.
What?
Johnny Cloud, Navajo ace, leads two rookie pilots on a routine mission when they spring a Nazi trap. Johnny shoots down most of the enemy planes, but his own plane is shot down by a Nazi ace in a similar plane design to one that killed his father's brothers during the First World War. Meanwhile, Sarge assigns a dog named Billy to join Gunner on patrol. Gunner is resentful of the dog, which he calls Pooch, and is laughed at by the other soldiers. Pooch proves himself by consistently warning Gunner of enemy attacks. Also, at the command of Commandant von Echt, Lieutenant Messer infiltrates the resistance cell of Mademoiselle Marie. Messer is disguised as American Lieutenant Harry West, but his temper gives him away as a Nazi. Confused? Don't worry, I'll be right back with Dr. Husband to explain everything.
It's an 80-page giant. It's a comic that's got 80 pages. An 80-page giant. An 80-page giant.
My favorite time of day is night. Yet here we are in the middle of the daytime. Recording.
Your voice.
It's 1,000% better than it's been.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Sure, folks.
I had to leave a public presentation the other day in the middle of it because I coughed and a giant snot bubble came out of my nose.
Oh, my God. Well, so I was very sick in February.
Uh-huh.
Second part of February.
Yeah.
You've gotten sick.
But it's just allergies.
Yeah, mine was actual, like, upper respiratory infection. Not infection, just virus.
Yeah.
Yours is an allergy.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I hope it gets better. I've got to sing for pay this weekend. And
I know you do.
I can't be dealing about with any old allergy nonsense.
No, and I have to travel, don't I, for pay?
Luckily, I say luckily, is ironically the best word, that we're getting a freeze tonight in the middle of April.
That's fine, right?
No.
I heard some crazy thing the other day. So I like when we get freezes in spring because it just...
Do ya?
I do.
Because it kills everything that's blooming?
Well, that's you certainly don't put you don't put plants out until the last frost is gone. Anyway, I like it just because I don't need it to get hot right away. You know, if I want to get hot, I'd move to Florida. So I welcome all cold weather as far as long as it stays, because once it gets warm, that's it. You don't go back. It's like sometimes it feels like around here we go from cold to just hot, right? But it's just because we don't appreciate it, I think.
You do go back. It was 80 degrees last week, and now here we are with a freeze.
Ugh, it's great.
When I was in college, there was a terrible ice storm on April 20th, which, as you know, this year is the date of Easter.
You don't say.
I do say.
My
I remember
goodness.
It well.
Yeah.
What else is new?
Oh God, I don't know. I mean, I'm prepping a lot of music right now for a gig in Montana, and then we've got you and I have a composer's concert next week that we're doing, and in my normal musical endeavors, I'm just, you know, I don't know. Help me out here.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
you're just busy. That's all.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, it's a good kind of busy. It's not a scary kind of like sad. Sort of like, oh God, I have no time. So, nothing like that. It's a good kind of busy. So, yeah, just loving it. What did I do? I went to visit a friend yesterday in the hospital. And didn't we do something this past weekend? Oh, we had a friend's birthday. Was this weekend?
Yes.
So, yeah. Yeah. So it was just lovely. Lovely. Just like lots of things going on.
Just little, just like a beehive.
Yes.
Of activity.
Yes.
Around here these days.
Yeah.
Well, shall we take a look at Sergeant Rock's battle scars?
Yes,
stars. Sorry, battle stars. I thought we'd look at some characters we don't normally see much of.
I like that we did this. Yes,
we've got a Sergeant Rock story here in this 80-page giant. We've got a haunted tank. We've got another one-off something that didn't look very interesting about a frog man.
Yeah, I didn't care about that.
But then we have several characters that we've only, well, a couple of them we've seen before. But
we saw Johnny Cloud before.
We've seen Johnny Cloud, the Navajo ace.
Right, and I've never seen Gunnar and Sarge.
You might have seen them in like a panel or two or right. something.
Right, and we've never seen Mademoiselle Marie.
Mademoiselle Marie is yeah. brand new.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew who she was, but I've never read a Mademoiselle Marie story.
Yeah.
Then I did some research, and wait, do you hear?
Okay.
Her sordid past.
All right.
Now, Johnny Cloud.
All right.
Navajo ace. As you may guess by his name, he's a Native American. Mm-hmm. Apparently his father fought in World War I.
Mm-hmm. The Great War.
The big one.
Mm-hmm.
And shame on me. I had no idea so many Native Americans fought in World War I.
Oh, sure.
12,000 Native Americans,
mm-hmm.
at least,
mm-hmm.
even though up to a third of Native Americans were not full U.S. citizens until 1924.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Even Native women went to France as nurses,
mm-hmm.
in WW1.
My goodness.
Well, they don't teach us this in schools.
Well, no, they don't.
Especially now.
Especially now.
But, yeah, so, and that's where the, you know, I knew about the code talkers in World War II.
Yes.
Well, they had code talkers in World War I as well.
Did they really?
Yes. Huh. Anyway, Johnny Cloud's parachuting out of his wrecked plane, and he's being chased by a Messerschmitt,
mm-hmm.
painted like a, well, a splash page. It looks like a playful porpoise.
With a mustache, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah.
All right. Through two world wars, my father, the chief, wore a feather of shame, hoping I would remove it by finding and destroying
the Ace of vengeance.
So Johnny Cloud, Navajo Ace, is on a training mission. He's nursing two new pilots on their first flight. And he spots this Messerschmitt,
yes,
that looks like a black hawk of death with stripes of doom.
Black hawk of death with stripes of doom.
Exactly as father pictured him.
Yes. The pilot was close enough for him to imagine that he saw the hawk-like glitter of his eyes. Boy, he's an evil-looking Nazi, isn't he?
We know he's evil because he's got a waxed-up curly mustache
and
a swastika
on his helmet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this German pilot attacks Johnny Cloud, shears the wing of Johnny Cloud's plane off. Mm-hmm. And
his Mustang.
His Mustang. Mm-hmm. Johnny has to eject, and then he goes into a flashback.
I fought not to open the ripcord while the enemy, like a black hawk with white stripes, tried to claw me again. I just imagine Johnny Cloud has a deep voice.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Unless he has a voice like Chakotay on Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, was a gentle
Makuchimoe, the bones of my ancestors.
Makuchimoe.
You know, he hated that role.
He did?
Yes.
Why?
Oh, he's done nothing but badmouth the show from start to finish.
What?
Mm-hmm.
He was a beloved character.
I know.
Why did he hate the role?
Well, because he didn't really have all that much to do after a while.
And Janeway was such a strong character.
Janeway's a very strong character. And then they tried to shoehorn that romance between him and Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
Which was a stupid idea.
Stupid. He was more like a father to her.
Well, we did love Voyager, though, didn't we?
Oh,
dear. That was our first appointment television as a couple.
You're right, it was.
I know.
Yes.
Back in those days, of course, we had to
watch
what was on. Or
we could have recorded them with the VCR.
Well, right. We did.
We didn't have TiVo then.
No.
No.
So here we are in flashback. Johnny Cloud's father, the chief, is explaining why he wears a white feather in his headband.
Yes.
The feather of shame.
Mm-hmm.
It's to remind him of the fateful day during the Great War.
On the Western Front when I was leading a patrol.
Back then, swooping down on us like a black hawk, the color of death, and with white stripes of doom.
It was on the day of armistice, hours before the war was to end.
Yeah.
There had been no fighting that day, and this black hawk, the color of death, and the white stripes of doom descended upon them and
strafed to the riverbank where they were resting. Not to be confused with Black Hawk, who's a hero on our side.
Mm-hmm.
A bullet struck Johnny's father's helmet and twisted him around, and
sent
him plunging into the river
on his back. And then the pilot buzzed back and forth, trying to looking for any signs of life to kill Johnny's father.
Right. He did not kill Johnny's father, mm-hmm. but he did kill Johnny's father's brothers.
Compatriots, yes.
Yeah, they keep saying brothers. I wasn't sure if they were literally blood relative brothers.
I just assumed that he just meant brothers in arms. Not actual brothers, right?
Right. I don't know.
I mean, then Johnny would have said something about his uncles.
True.
Right.
Johnny's father sings a little song.
Yes, I know how the song goes.
Okay.
So the lyrics are, I promise to hunt down the forest... To hunt the forest of the skies until I track down your killer, oh my brothers. And so you can imagine it's a very serious song.
Mournful.
I promise to hunt down the forest of the skies until I track down your killers, oh my brothers.
That's not mournful.
You don't think so?
No. I was thinking something more.
I promise to hunt down the forest to the...
Okay, that's better.
Okay, all I did was made it minor. Forest of the skies, until I track down your killer, oh brothers.
I was thinking something along the lines of the Huron Carol.
Okay, how would that go?
Well, almighty something get chamooing.
Oh, yes.
I promise to hunt down the forest.
You keep putting the word down in there. It's not in there.
Oh, for God's sake.
I promise to hunt the forest of the skies until I track down your killer, oh, my brothers.
That's more like, yeah, okay. That'll work. The war ends 1 hour later, and great is Chief Cloud's shame, for his vow to avenge his brothers can never be fulfilled.
And so the chief tells his son this story and tells him quite often.
Yes. And then, until the day when Johnny went to war himself in the Air Force, and his father made an impossible request.
An impossible request. It truly is. Hey, son, if you happen to see that guy who shot down my brothers and tried to kill me in the river, would you make sure to get rid of him for me?
First of all, it's not going to be the same plane from 20 years ago, is it?
And the same pilot.
Anyway, Johnny promises. And as you may recall, Johnny often sees an ancestor of his in the sky riding a cloudy horse.
That's really cool, actually.
Yeah,
I'd love to see that.
So he searches and searches for the Killer Hawk plane. Doesn't see it. Years and years go by.
Isn't that interesting, that one panel of him with all those black crosses on his plane? Yes. For all the pilots he's killed.
He racks up
planes he's
kill after kill after kill. Mm-hmm. But all these victories are empty, for I have made an impossible vow. How will I ever be able to return home and face my father?
Now we flash forward to the morning of the where the story began.
Yes, where he's junior pilots who look like beardless braves of his tribe. Now, this may be an urban legend, but when I was in school, grade school, elementary school, mm-hmm. I went to camp, and there was a Native American boy there from another school. And the fellows all made a big deal of how, oh, you're so lucky because Indians can't grow beards.
What a terrible thing
for them
to say.
But it seemed, when I was in fourth grade, it seemed to be the common knowledge that everyone knew.
Well, everything that we knew about Native Americans was presented to us in media, you know.
Yes.
So it was all very tropes, lots of, you know, inappropriate, insensitive tropes.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So I mean, I'm guessing that's not the truth.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking the Brady Bunch, when they got lost in the Grand Canyon.
And they fed pork and beans out of the flashlight.
Yeah, and Westerns and all sorts of things. Oh, well, of course, Grizzly Adams, which was one of my favorite shows.
Yes.
And what was his friend's name? Grizzly Adams' friend's name?
I don't remember.
Oh, my, how could I forget that?
It's your favorite show.
I know. It'll come to me.
Okay.
Okay.
So off they go into the wild blue yonder. Chief Cloud, Chief Ghost Cloud,
uh-huh.
watching over
mm-hmm.
as usual. They take off three abreast and into the clouds they go. Then they see these enemies approaching. And what do you think Johnny Cloud sees?
He sees the
Messerschmitt.
The Messerschmitt. Well, no. Yes. The
Messerschmitt.
Right. So I was thinking of the biplane that his father fought, which would not be the same.
No. But there's a whole squadron of Nazi planes here.
Mm-hmm.
They decoy Johnny and his young charges toward the ground where they're going to attack him, but Johnny's too wise for them. So they get back up in the sky.
Yeah.
There are 10 fighters waiting on the near side of a big cloud. The only escape is to go through these fighters and get into the cloud bank.
Yeah.
Now, how's this going to happen? Because it's Johnny Cloud. He's got two trainees with him.
Well, how's it going to happen?
Yeah.
I don't know. They're in the sky. They just fly around. No, I mean, they've changed formation.
Yes.
Is this a test? Because I remember.
Okay, go.
They change formation. Johnny takes the lead and has the guys go into the cloud formation, and he's going to take on... They're going to go through and break up the formation first, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then he's going to take on... He's going to send the two guys back, his two trainees back, and he's going to take on the guy below.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So they get into the cloud.
Did I pass?
Yes.
Thank you.
He orders the trainees back to the base.
Mm-hmm.
They have just enough gas to get back.
Yep.
And they dare not disobey an order.
And now, he's never lost a trainee on on the first day of training.
Never. And this is where the story opened. Johnny's been hit. He ejects. He's parachuting out, and he sees that. It's not a porpoise, it's a hawk, I can see now.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that they've said repeatedly over and over that it's a hawk.
Oh, my gosh. What page are you on?
I'm on page, I don't know. There's no page numbers. 26.
Okay,
I
thought so.
He waits the last minute to open his chute so that he can't be seen.
Right. He plunges down as far as he can.
Yeah.
And then pulls the chute open at the last minute, which, of course, slows him down and creates a large target for the pilot to hone in on.
And he shoots, and the chute is shot to ribbons.
Yes, but he gets caught. He catches himself in the trees. Or yes. Rather, the trees cushion his break, and he was able to pull himself out of his chute and get to the ground.
Correct. The Messerschmitt lands and calls Nazi infantry. And they're going to search the woods for Johnny Cloud.
Yeah.
I should mention, all of these stories that we're reading are like only the fourth or fifth appearance of these individual characters.
Oh.
So very early in their careers.
Okay.
All right. They're tracking Johnny through the woods. It appears to be the very same evil mustached pilot from World War One.
Yes.
He's taunting Johnny, telling him he borrowed an automatic weapon from the infantry to continue the game on foot. Ha ha! My gun against your pistol, the next move is yours.
Who's the handsome devil who plays the bad guy in The Rocketeer with the mustache?
Timothy Dalton.
He looks like Timothy Dalton.
He does, yes.
Yes. Like an evil Timothy Dalton.
Johnny runs and runs, climbs a tree, the guy shoots at the tree. Johnny crashes to the ground.
Oh man, he is just he's got a machine gun. So he's Johnny's just got a pistol. He's just waiting to get a really good shot. But he keeps on running away from this guy because this guy's rifle's trained on Johnny for some reason. He's just really good at. Luckily, Johnny hasn't gotten shot, but lots of close calls.
Very close.
Yeah.
Johnny gets to a shallow creek. Too wide to cross before the guy gets him in his sights, but Johnny realizes he's trapped at bay, just like his father was.
Yep.
A burst rips the pistol from his hand and topples him backwards. He lay there beneath the water, holding his breath. The water is crystal clear. His pistol's gone. All he has left, the only weapon at his command, is his little wing pin.
Yes, his wings, his metal, exactly, metal winged pin.
This Nazi comes upon Johnny right over top of him, is about to shoot him in the face. Johnny whips that wing pin right at his eyes.
Yep.
And he's dazed by the blow. The killer falls across Johnny. Johnny wrestles him like an alligator.
And drowns him
in the river.
Yeah.
Yes, queen. And gets his wings back.
He certainly does. And he sees his great spirit.
Big brother in the sky. Smiling down on him. Now I can write my father that he can remove the feather of shame at last.
Nice.
The end. I don't know if I can go on.
Well, you must.
I have to. Because
our God, it's driving me insane.
What?
Nakoma is the friend of Grizzly Adams.
Yes.
All I could think of the entire time was Chakotay. I'm like, that's not it.
That's not it. That's Star Trek Voyager.
Right. And then I was going, in my head, I'm going, Inupchuk. I'm like, nope, that's
Apache
the call
Chief.
Of Apache Chief. Yep, Nakoma. Yep. All right.
Our next.
Oh, I love this story. Any story featuring a dog.
This is, again, an early appearance of Gunner and Sarge.
So this is a recurring?
A recurring characters, yes. Mm-hmm. And this is, in fact, the first appearance of Billy, a.k.a. Pooch, who would continue.
Oh, you're kidding.
Joining Gunner and Sarge? No.
Oh, my gosh. This is great. I would totally read these stories.
Oh.
Yes,
good
of
to know.
Yes. Says the man who cried at the
site of Crypto.
In the
preview of Superman.
Yes, thank you.
Gunner and Sarge are a team. They continue on.
Well, Sarge is an asshole.
Well, both.
No, he's an asshole.
Gunner and Sarge both came from the wrong side of the tracks.
Oh, okay.
So they're rough and tumble, you know.
Sarge is, he's just not nice, but
kind of
an
asshole.
Yeah.
Gunner and Sarge continue, as does Johnny Cloud. You remember our old friend Captain Storm, the peg-leg PT boat captain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at some point during the war, all of these gentlemen, Captain Storm loses a crew again.
Wow. Talk about unlucky.
Gunner and Sarge lose their battalion or whoever they're fighting with.
Okay.
Johnny Cloud loses some trainees or something. I don't know. Okay. Anyway.
They all gather together.
They all gather together as a special detachment called the Losers.
The Losers?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's not something we've read.
It's not. We won't, because that happens in the late 60s, early 70s.
Okay.
But just so you know, they are continuing characters, and they do continue on.
Okay.
Pooch is canonically a litter mate of Rex the Wonder Dog, who had his own series from 1951 to 1959.
Okay.
Series which also introduced Bobo the Detective Chimp, who's now a member of the Justice League Dark.
No.
Yeah.
Bobo the Detective Chimp.
Yes, yes. Oh, he's friends with Zatanna, whom we had such fun with last week.
Of course.
Well, you don't know.
Bobo the Detective Chimp.
You cry at a flying dog in a cape, and then you're looking askance at Detective Chimp.
Oh, you know how I feel about monkeys.
I know.
Listener.
Well, I'm never allowed to have one in the home.
This is an ongoing gentle argument between Dr. Bob and me. Dr. Bob would very much like to have a pet monkey.
Not a pet monkey, a family of performing pet monkeys.
And I have sternly put my foot down. Absolutely not. We will never. I don't believe in holding primates as pets.
And they're not pets. They're performers. They enjoy it.
Especially not anything that has the ability to reach into its own diaper and throw its feces at you.
Well, they're performing monkeys. They have to wear clothes.
No.
Where else are they supposed to have their...
This is, like I said, this is a point of gentle tension between the two of us. We have argued over this for probably 32 years.
Well, if Lucy Ball can have a family of performing monkeys, she
thought she didn't really have a family of performing monkeys. It was on a television show, and there was a trainer there, and she didn't have to take them home.
Well, no, she was babysitting, but she was babysitting them in her home.
She didn't have to feed them.
Yes,
or
she did. That's part
on the television show, not in real life.
What is the difference? I'm just a gunner.
Let's continue.
A guy with a Thompson.
That's his Tommy gun? His gun? Sure. Not a Tommy gun, but what's that kind of gun?
Just gunner and his gun. It's all he needs in the world, but Sarge has other opinions.
Sarge has got a beautiful, brilliant set of gigantic chompers, doesn't he? Teeth. Oh, yeah. I don't know how he talks, but I think of him as going like, just like that, yeah, gunner.
So Sarge just decided that Gunner needs a pal. Billy's his name. Billy the dog, who loves Gunner, runs up and gives him a nice big lick on the face.
And jumps on his belly, gives him a nice big belly punch.
I hope Billy doesn't eat his own poop like our dog Junebug, because those kisses aren't very fun. Billy is going to take Sarge's place on patrol, meaning he outranks Gunner.
Nice.
Yeah. Hardy har har. Now Gunner goes off on patrol the next day. Seems like he's slipped Pooch, but...
Tried to. But Sarge catches up and says, forget something, Gunner? Take Billy with you.
So off Pooch and Gunner. I'm just going to call him Pooch because that's what they call him in...
Okay, let's call him Pooch.
Succeeding years.
Mm-hmm.
So things are very dead in the patrol area. He sits down to get some grub.
He decides he's going to sit on this old log in the distance. Log, yes. You know, maybe use it as a table. Well, then what happens?
Pooch tackles him.
Right down to the ground.
Right down to the ground, because guess what? In that log where he was about to sit down and eat, there's a sniper hidden.
With a gun, and starts firing on him.
Mm-hmm. So Gunner sprays the log. He gets it. He gets the sniper.
Mm-hmm.
Pooch is very happy.
Oh.
Jumping and licking. Gunner's having none of it. What are you, a war dog or a lap dog? A girl acts like that, not a Marine.
Well, good thing Pooch has strong armor.
Yes.
Around his heart, because he doesn't get hurt. His feelings hurt.
They get back to their perimeter off their patrol, and hear these fellows making fun of Gunner for having a dog with him.
Yeah.
Hardy, har, har. Here comes the dog biscuit patrol.
Which one is the dog, Sarge? Oh, har, 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 har. Well, then the most touching panel on the next
this
page.
This is adorable.
He says, I used to be a man with a gun, and that gun was just like my right arm. I ate with it, slept with it, but things are different now.
He's bunked down in a hole dug in the dirt, and that dog gets right down there in that hole with him.
Lays down with him.
Now, Sarge is not going to have Gunner mistreating this poor old dog. All this pooch wants is to save your life and love ya. And those other fellows still laughing. Still laughing the next day when Gunner and Pooch go out on patrol. Don't they make a lovely couple? Hardy, har, har. I'd just turn around and shoot these guys in the face. Shut your mouths.
Shut your traps. Bang, bang, bang. He can't shoot his buddies.
They stop on patrol to get some water. And Pooch knocks Gunner
right into the water.
Hits him in the back and knocks him right down into the water.
And he won't help. He won't let him get up.
No, he's like he's trying to drown him.
Yeah.
We know why.
There's a patrol boat.
Patrol boat. And there's only one kind of patrol boat patrolling these waters, the Japanese. The boat stops. Gunner has to surface. But luckily, he's got an armed grenade, which is already primed. He throws the grenade at the patrol boat, and that's that.
And then Pooch helps pull him out of the water because he's so exhausted.
Out of the water.
Yeah.
And then licks him. Dry, except that doesn't work. Because licking is not dry.
No.
Now, they get back to the perimeter. These guys are still making fun. I would just leave. I'd just take Pooch and leave.
Well,
go AWOL.
You can't do that when you're at war.
You can if you're being teased. That's a valid excuse. Why'd you leave, soldier? I was being teased.
Well, I'm glad I wasn't
in these gentlemen were creating a hostile work environment.
At war with you.
Gosh. Why didn't he call HR?
God. Oh, shoot.
All right.
Okay.
They go off on patrol the next day.
Yep.
He tells Pooch, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I was a lot better off without you.
Oh. Get on. Get out of here. Go on.
And later.
He's Moroccan. He doesn't really throw that.
No. Later, they are fired upon by a sniper up in a tree, which Pooch has not warned him about. So Gunner thinks, that's it. I've done it.
Yep.
I've hurt his feelings. He's not going to help me anymore. And I'll be free of him. But then, right after the sniper attack, they down the sniper, and then Pooch tackles him to the ground. Because there's mortar fire.
There's mortar fire. He saves him from mortar fire.
The sniper was a decoy.
Pooch has saved his life three times.
Yes. Gunner fires and gets the mortar firer. And Pooch gets a licking. Gets to licking, I should say. That was, I didn't want to deceive anyone.
No, I was so worried during this entire story that Pooch was going to get shot. This is the one time appearance of a dog, and then he was going to get shot. And then I was going to be angry with you for picking this story.
I wouldn't have subjected you to that. Now, still, after all of this, Gunner is trying to think of a way that he can get rid of Pooch, foist him off on another guy.
Yeah.
The next day, the jungle helps him out. Pooch gets a thorn in his paw.
Yeah.
So I can't take him on patrol, Sarge. He's got a thorn in his paw.
They got to bandage up his paw. So Sarge says, fine, I got to go with you.
Yes. But something tells me you're going to be sorry. The Pooch ain't tagging along on this trip, Gunner. So off they go into the jungle, Gunner and Sarge. They are hit by a mortar.
I guess mortar, yeah. Blind and sheet of flame.
Gunner is injured. He's blinded.
Yeah.
So Sarge bandages up his eyes and starts dragging him through the jungle back to the medics. But they are spotted by the enemy. So Sarge has got to act as decoy, lure the enemy away from Gunner.
But there's a tank. There's a tank, so he's got to lure the tank away.
Yes.
Lure the tank away from them, leaving Gunner by himself up against a tree.
Now Gunner can hear the tank following Sarge. He's listening for a grenade explosion, which would mean that Sarge was fighting the tank, but all he hears is a machine gun and then...
nothing.
Silence.
Yeah, that's not good.
He assumes that the tank has killed Sarge. He starts crawling out of the jungle, but he's blind, you remember.
Yeah.
How's he going to make it?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he feels a cold nose rubbing all over him.
It's Pooch.
Sarge.
It's Pooch.
Pooch. Yeah. Pooch has come to find him. So Gunner grabs hold of his collar, and off they go to find Sarge. Do you think our dogs could do that if you told them to go find a specific person?
No.
I don't.
I don't.
I think we'd be lying dead in the jungle.
For sure.
Eaten by our own dogs.
No, dogs don't eat you. Dogs won't eat you when you die.
Are you sure?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, if a dog really loves you and you die, and it doesn't want to leave your side, it'll die right beside you.
What if you order it to eat you? If you know you're dying.
Dogs won't eat you.
Well, agree to disagree.
If you're their owner.
Yeah.
And you've bonded with them, they won't eat you.
I'm going to investigate that.
Okay.
Now, he hears Pooch growling. Pooch has led him to the very enemy tank.
To his death.
To his death. No, it's parked. So Gunner thinks, well, it's probably cornered Sarge in the underbrush and is waiting for him to make a move or a sound so it can finish the job.
So he's quietly feeling. He's laying on the ground next to the tank, trying to find a way to get feel a hole so he could fire into it.
Of course, there is a hole. It's a hole where the enemy gun is poking out of the tank.
But then what does Pooch do?
Pooch creates a diversion.
Yes.
Draw fire away from Gunner so that Gunner can get his own rifle inside the tank.
Which he does.
And pour everything he has into it. And then the tank explodes.
Yeah.
Gunner is stunned, laying on the ground. He assumes Pooch is dead, but Pooch is not dead.
Nope.
Pooch made it and comes up and starts licking his face with his old poop mouth breath.
Stop. Pooch doesn't eat his own poop.
You don't know.
He doesn't.
You don't know that.
He doesn't.
Then he hears Sarge's voice.
Yep.
He says, Gunner, you must have flipped your lid letting that dog lick your face. I'm going to have the medics look you over when we get back. So they get back. Sarge says, the way you knocked over that tank blindfolded, Gunner, you proved you can operate without the Pooch, so I'm going to shift him to another scout. That's Sarge.
Yeah.
It took me all the time we were in the hospital to make him change his mind.
Yeah.
And now Pooch is a permanent part of the team.
Yeah.
So, yes, Gunner, Sarge, Pooch continue on together.
Nice.
Pooch is not a part of the losers originally, but he does come back just in time for the losers to be killed during the crisis on Infinite Earths.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So that's fun.
Yeah, that's fun. Okay, so let's go forward to our last story of the day, shall
we? Our last story, Mademoiselle Marie.
Yeah.
First of all, I said something last week about how lettering in comics never has lowercase. Unless your name is Mademoiselle Marie, and then every time your name is mentioned, it's a lowercase.
Isn't that interesting?
Mademoiselle Marie is a resistance fighter in wartime France.
Mm-hmm.
She... had at least a kissing scene with Sergeant Rock that I've seen evidence of.
Okay.
She also had an illegitimate daughter.
No.
And the father is rumored to be Alfred,
Pennyworth, Batman's butler.
What?
Wow. Yeah, because he, of course, fought in the resistance because he was a Shakespearean actor and he used his acting skills to fight the Nazis in wartime France.
Now, who says that acting isn't a good, solid profession?
Right. Remember, mm-hmm. in Captain Storm, the acting troupe had to come through and they were trained in so many different types of things.
I do remember acting. That. Yes.
It was a perfect trap. There didn't seem to be any possible way in which Marie could escape, not after she herself deliberately chose to walk into
the Steel Trap.
A new two-part story of the adventures of the famous underground fighter, Mademoiselle Marie.
Part one.
Art by Mort Drucker, whom you'll know, probably not the name, but you might recognize his style from Mad Magazine.
Oh, okay.
Mademoiselle Marie is obviously a fighter because she wears a beret. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why she needs to wear a T-length skirt and open sole flats.
Yeah, I wasn't happy with the skirt. Just because she does quite a bit of active fighting in this.
Very active.
Which can be difficult in a skirt.
All right.
I'm not speaking from personal.
No. At Gestapo HQ in the Normandy coast area of occupied France, strange questioning is going on.
Where is the home of the Field of the Yankees?
The Bronx, in New York City, Herr Commandant.
Who is Satchmo?
The nickname of the king of American jazz trumpet players, Louis Armstrong.
What is a pinup?
A photograph of a beautiful young girl, 9 times out of 10, in a scanty bathing suit.
Ha, and then a chance in uniform is made. A change, rather, change.
Yes.
Yeah, with your papers and your intimate knowledge of the American customs, you will easily pass for a genuine American ranger lieutenant. You have passed every test, Lieutenant Messa. Congratulations.
Thank you, Herr Commandant.
Yeah! You, Lieutenant Harry West, of the American Rangers, will spring my trap upon the French Canary, whose underground fighting has disrupted this entire sector, Mademoiselle Marie.
Mm. So, yes.
That's the idea. This gentleman is
going to pose as an American prisoner of war, and when Mademoiselle Marie rescues him, quote-unquote, she will be placing her neck in a noose.
Mm.
So the plan is in play. Allied intelligence is going to send a message to Mademoiselle Marie.
You're skipping over the bottom two.
We need all this Nazi yelling?
Well, the thing you need is to know that this guy has the guy who's portraying an American has a very, very short
hair, trigger temper,
very short fuse, and is a very proud. Nazi officer, right? Yes, that's important to know. Is an important character trait of this man. Thank you. All right,
you sound like a true Nazi officer, Lieutenant Messer, but now you must forget everything and assume your role of Lieutenant Harry West.
Yeah.
All right. Allied intelligence sending a message to Mademoiselle Marie. You will jam it, and with our new secret equipment, insert the message I will give you in its place. Understand?
Yes, he says, I dig you.
You dig me? You dig me? Oh, 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 you're perfect. More American than even an Americana. Mademoiselle Marie will never find you out until you lead her right here to Gestapo HQ. Ho, ho!
Meanwhile, in a clearing in the woods, a small group anxiously awaits until...
Now, we should... mention that Mademoiselle Marie only speaks in French...
Fringlish, yes.
Which is accurately spelled.
There is your pickup...
Oh, I can't wear...
There is your pickup, plane captain. Soon you will be back in England. E-E-N-G-L-A-N-D. Yes.
He goes, Marie, you saved my life and after I crashed. You hid me. Now you've even got me a trip back. How can I thank you? Now, this is a real American soldier she's helping.
By helping to free La Belle France from the Nazi invader.
I'll be back, Marie, and I'll keep coming back until you no longer have to fight.
Bon chance, mon captain.
So long, Pop, he says to her companion. So anyway, so they're walking away.
Yes.
And he's flying away, and her compatriot says, I miss le capitaine already. So friendly, like the American is.
Oui, stripes or bars, it make no difference.
The enemy still holds our land. We have work to do. Come.
Later, as a Nazi tank lumbers along a country road...
They're searching for Mademoiselle Marie and sure her guerrilla fighters, are. Which they call Maquis.
Maquis, yes.
Yeah. The Maquis were the fighters on the Voyager.
Star Trek Voyager. Well, yes, that's why they took the name, because they were resistance against the... Whoever it was. Dominion? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Because I never watched Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. Don't care. I'm sorry. Sorry, listeners. Never watched it.
I do care. We just never watched it.
Yeah.
There's so many things to watch nowadays. We'll get to it. Don't worry. The tank commander, apparently Mademoiselle Marie is famous for her booby traps, so he's constantly patrolling the roads. According to Gestapo, Colonel von Echt's plan...
Mm-hmm.
And making Mademoiselle Marie and her compatriots hide in the woods like animals. Suddenly, from one side of the road, guerrilla fighters open fire, aiming at Z view slits
in the tanks.
The Nazis sweep the woods with machine gun fire,
scattering the guerrilla fighters.
French resistance fighters scatter. Mademoiselle Marie is losing her grip. Ha, ha, ha.
However, the tank is climbing, about to cross a bridge, stops over the bridge to check, to proceed, to examine the terrain ahead. Little do they know that under the bridge is Mademoiselle Marie,
France's most famed guerrilla leader.
With a bundle of dynamite with a short fuse.
Yes. Now, she can hear the tank above her. The tank halts just at the edge of the bridge, meaning... If this dynamite goes off, it's not going to do any good.
No, because they'll be able to back off the bridge.
Right. So she's watching this fuse. It's a very short fuse. She could snuff it out, but then what if the tank starts moving? Then she's sunk.
Excellent sequence of panels here. We as the readers have no idea what's about to happen.
No.
It's very dangerous until we turn the page.
Just at the very last possible second, the tank starts moving. She dives off the bridge, the dynamite goes off, and the tank is plunged into the water.
Yes.
Killing everyone aboard, presumably.
Yes.
Au revoir, enemy of freedom.
So, shortly at the guerrilla hideout in the woods behind a waterfall.
Oh, that's romantic. Behind a waterfall. Marie learns that the Nazis are trying to jam the airways... But our message is coming through at last.
Prepare to receive agent landing in field X-15 at 7. Top secret mission, operate under his command. Over.
So off they go. But you are the leader of this sector, Marie. The agent should be under your command.
She says, are you soldiers or schoolboys? The success of the mission is all that matters.
They arrive at the appointed field, X-15.
Mm-hmm.
At 7, the appointed time.
Mm-hmm.
They remain hidden to ensure that it's not a Gestapo trap. And suddenly, a Nazi Focke-Wulf dives like a hawk on the Allied plane and shoots it down. And this gentleman with Marie, who looks like he hasn't washed in a while. are you still suspicious, Marie? Would the Nazis shoot down their own agent? If it was a trap?
Suddenly, a single figure hurtles out of the Nazi spy.
Well, it's the Nazi spy, and he knows that they've been firing blanks.
Yes. And he set up,
a crate of fire. Smoke pot to make the plane look like it was burning. He parachutes into the middle of the field.
Remember, the idea is for this guy, this spy, to find these French guerrilla fighters. Expose their hideout and lure them back to the Nazi headquarters.
Yeah. So they take him back to the hideout. They get him inside.
And they form a plan.
Yes.
The idea is that he says, that the top nuclear scientist, he posing as the American, says, yes. Professor Lane, the top nuclear scientist, was kidnapped from London. He's being kept at the Gestapo headquarters for preliminary questioning. They have to sneak in there and rescue him from Gestapo headquarters.
And since we know that everything in the DC universe is connected, we can assume that Professor Lane is a British uncle of Lois Lane, back in America.
Okay, all right.
All right.
That tracks.
This Gestapo agent says, I need two men to help me rescue the professor from Gestapo HQ while the rest of you create a diversion at the other end of town. Of course, Mademoiselle Marie volunteers
I will
to
go with
him.
You.
Mm-hmm. No, no. It's too dangerous for a chick.
I'm a soldier of France, not a girl in pigtails. It is settled.
All right. After plans are made for the diversion at the other end of town and it is sufficiently dark, the guerrillas split up. Lieutenant Vessex, what's his name? Vesser. I don't remember. The Gestapo agent. He's with Mademoiselle Marie and this unwashed gentleman, her friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all a trick. She fell for it, that he was trying to get her to not go because she's a chick. Mm. It's too dangerous for a girl, as Mark Gray would say.
Yeah.
Suddenly, this unwashed gentleman accidentally steps on the Gestapo agent's foot, and he goes off.
His character flaw.
You miserable, clumsy beggar, you blundering apology for a soldier.
He says, gosh, sorry. I'm sorry. He says, gosh, sorry, I blew my top. Nerves, I guess. And the unwashed gentleman says, oh, it is understandable, monsieur. I was clumsy, eh, Marie?
Oui, I understand. Now, we must wait for the signal from the Ozzers. Ozzers.
In 3 minutes, Gestapo headquarters is alarmed when firing is heard at the other side of town.
Yes, these are the other Maquis agents who are down the other end of town, creating a diversion.
We will put down the miserable Maquis attack. That's not German. We will put down the miserable Maquis attack in short order, Herr Commandant.
That's good.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, from one rooftop to another, Mademoiselle Marie makes her way until they are on the roof of the Gestapo HQ, where it will be a cinch to snatch the professor with every Nazi knucklehead the other end of town. Toss down the rope, Pop, that's the unwashed gentleman, and we'll climb down to the courtyard.
So after the rope is lowered, the American says, climb down first, honey. I'll cover you, then I'll climb down. Pop will cover me.
And Mademoiselle Marie says, I give you,
you that honor.
He says, have you flipped your lid, chicken? I'm in command. You go get you've got your orders.
And she's got him at gunpoint. She says, I'm ordering you to go first.
Well.
As the enemy agent starts down the rope, he suddenly turns and fires up at Mademoiselle Marie.
Miserable fool. You could have lived if you had obeyed orders.
Marie fires back.
And he shoots. Pop.
Yeah.
The American spy. The Nazi spy posing as an American shoots Pop.
He says, "Do not shoot. I'm unarmed. I'm your prisoner. As an officer of the Third Reich, I demand every privilege under the Geneva Convention."
He says. She says to him, "Oh, we will make our escape. Down the rope you go." I do a terrible French accent.
So, from an opposite roof, there are Gestapo agents waiting for the person that's going to come down the rope first, which was supposed to be Mademoiselle Marie,
yeah.
So, this is this Gestapo agent. He's the first one down the rope, and they are shooting at him, and he's
And they hit him.
Killed.
And they kill him.
Good riddance. Marie helps her friend Pop up, who's been wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, how did you know?
He forgot himself when he insulted you in the tone of the Nazi officer, as if you were dirt under his heels.
Yes, as everyone knows, only Nazis have bad tempers. Now, Pop says, you cannot go down the rope, Marie, to draw fire away from me, because that will be certain death.
So, what are you? What are you, a schoolboy or a soldier of France? I am here, I am in command here. Hurry!
Do not stop for anything.
Mon petit Marie.
Rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat.
Down the rope she goes. The Nazis on the other roof are firing.
She pulls out a gun and she returns fire.
She's not having it.
Nope. And she blows them Nazis right off the wherever they are.
Wow,
they're a roof on an overhead. They're
on a roof. On a roof. But then suddenly her other Maquis soldiers arrive and
cover her
escape.
Yep.
Back to the concealment of the woods. There really was a scientist.
Scientist, yes.
Who's been rescued. Luckily, a townswoman saw him in the truck and told the Maquis soldiers. Otherwise, he'd be on his way to Berlin.
Mm.
How can I thank you, Marie?
You do her voice, yeah.
By helping us fight until La Belle France is free, Professor Lane.
And in the debris of the courtyard at Gestapo headquarters, this Nazi commander who orchestrated this entire thing, trained his spy and everything.
Yes. I swear by der Führer, I will not rest until I cage that French canary. Mademoiselle Marie.
He's firing his pistol at a poster of her.
Yes. Yeah. Pow, pow, pow. I am going to look into more Mademoiselle Marie stories.
Oh, please do.
I like this.
Me too.
Like I said, she does kiss Sergeant Rock. She does apparently get around because she has a...
Well, I just don't like the fact that she has to do all of it in a pencil skirt.
No.
Mm-mm.
That's not right.
Mm-mm.
I wonder if she sings. She's probably had to go undercover as a cabaret singer or something, wouldn't you think?
Of course. That sounds like something they would do.
La vie en rose. Hey, I can sing.
You can.
I'm cured.
Yeah, you are.
You can find us on social media at GoGoCheckPod. You can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts from. You can hear us on our sister podcast, Nerd Orchestra. We just dropped a terrific new episode all about TV theme songs from the 60s and 70s. You're sure to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find us right back here next week if Dr. Husband can stay in town long enough.
This is my last trip episode. For a long time.
Is it?
I think so.
Well, we'll yeah. see about that.
Yeah.
Anything to add?
No, it's been delightful spending time
As
with you again.
As usual.
Yeah.
Bye!
Hey, Mr. Wind, just keep us sailing.
We'll keep us sailing along.
High in the sky, there's no curtain.
Yes, we'll have fun. So everyone, come on.
Hey, you on the ground.
You on the ground.
Take a look up and see what we found.
Nothing to tie us. Bluebirds come up to guide us.
When you're beside me, we can